The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We're constantly being told that AI is going to change the way we live, the way we work, the way we play. We're also told that we all need to adapt to AI and use it or we will miss the boat. But my next guest says that before we buy into any predictions, we need to stop and ask, who's telling us this and what are they selling? Let's find out more from philosopher, author and Oxford professor Carissa Velez, who has recently published her new book, Prophecy. Carissa, you're so welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much for having me.
So if we're told that something like AI is going to define us and change us and become intrinsic to all of our lives, you argue that that in itself becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, predictions about the social world act like magnets. They tend to bend reality towards themselves. And so the first thing to note is that no prediction is ever a fact. It can be, at best, an educated guess, but more often than not, it's a power play in disguise. And instead of just accepting it as a fact and obeying and making the prediction become a self-fulfilling prophecy, maybe we should stop for a second. And if we don't like the prediction that we're listening to, we should defy it.
So in particular, do you say that that's happening with AI?
Yes, it's a fundamental tool of Silicon Valley that they sell us a vision of the future. And they sell it not as a hypothesis or a possibility, but that is inevitable. They tell us that that is progress and that's what it looks like and there's nothing to do about it. And that's a very authoritarian tactic. We've seen it before in authoritarian regimes, but that it's being used by companies is no different, particularly companies that are so powerful. And part of the duty of citizens in a democracy is to question that and to say, well, is that the future that we want? And if not, what are we going to do to build the future that we want to live in?
Well, tell us a little bit about the lessons that we have learned from history, because I suspect that you believe that predictions have always been a bit of a con man's charter.
Yes, and it's fascinating that even though there are thousands of books and even academic journals on prediction, there wasn't even one book on the ethics of prediction, of on what kinds of predictions maybe we shouldn't do. And one of the lessons is that next to leaders, you always find a prophet. And even though the technology of AI is very different from, say, astrology or the Oracle of Delphi, the political role that they play is actually quite similar. And if you would have interviewed a medieval European and asked them about astrology, they would have said something like, well, it's a very technical discipline, it's very hard to understand, it's very opaque, and it's the cutting-edge decision-making method. That's exactly what we say about AI today.
But what does it say about us as human beings that we so desperately want and have always desperately wanted to know what's going to happen into the future?
Well, it's nerve-wracking to be a human being. We're, in a way, too smart because we know of everything that can go wrong and we want to avoid bad things from happening, and we get the illusion that if we can see around the corner, that will make us safer and that it will give us a competitive advantage. The trap is that that assumes that there's a script to be discovered, but the future is unwritten and, in fact, it's unpredictable. And not to be aware of that, perversely, makes us more unsafe.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, going back again to the self-fulfilling prophecy, if a fortune teller tells you that you're going to have a happy marriage to a fair-haired man, there's a risk that you're going to turn down the perfectly suitable dark-haired man.
Exactly. Predictions change our expectations about the world if we believe them. But we have the power to question them. So if Oedipus had laughed off the prediction that he would marry his mother and murder his father, instead of getting scared and trying to run away from it, he wouldn't have made the prediction come true.
Tell me a little bit more about that theory, because you talk about power being in our hands when we ignore predictions. But when predictions are taken seriously, it becomes more about the power of the person making the prediction rather than the knowledge that they have.
Exactly. So when a tech executive says that we will use his product tomorrow everywhere and for everything, and if you don't, you're going to fall behind the curve, what they're trying to do is to instill in you the fear of missing out so that you will go out and buy that product and fulfill their vision of the future, which also happens to line their pockets. And instead, we should realize that, no, that the future is unwritten, that nobody knows what it holds, that it's partly up to us to build it, and that uncertainty is actually very good news, because even though it can be nerve-wracking, it also means that we have the power to change the future. Because if you knew exactly where you would be tomorrow and every day after that, it would mean that you lived in a police state.
We also have to make the distinction, don't we, Carissa, between those who are set to benefit financially from these predictions and those who are experts, who have studied a field and are using data analysis to predict certain outcomes.
Yes, and maybe even a more important distinction is predictions about things and predictions about the social world. Because if I make a prediction about a molecule, it's not going to change the molecule. But if I make a prediction about a human being, even if I have good intentions, there's a very high likelihood that it will affect that human being. So even, for example, predictions by economists with good intentions can shape the future. And therefore, we should be much more careful, and we need a public debate about what are the rules of who gets to make these predictions and when maybe we shouldn't predict something, even if we could.
Mm-hmm. So when we hear on the news, consumer confidence is down because interest rate rises are expected and inflation is going to increase, that is going to affect how we behave that day, that week, that month when it comes to our spending.
Exactly. So if I predict that interest rates are going up, people will try to get loans quicker because they want to make sure that they get it on a low price. But that in itself increases demand, which makes the interest go up. And so it has this reflexivity that we're, I think, not mindful enough of how it can be detrimental to democracy.
But if I'm buying life insurance and I'm smoking 20 cigarettes a day and I drink half a bottle of wine every night and I don't do any exercise, then the prediction that I am going to have a heart attack at some point is probably pretty accurate, isn't it?
Yes, it can be. But one of the insights of studying the history of prediction is there are many ways of making a prediction accurate. So one way is drinking yourself to death, of course. But another way is stressing someone out so much that their health will deteriorate. And so we have to be very careful to protect people from those kind of pernicious influences.
So we have to make a really educated decision around who is making this prediction. Is this an expert voice who doesn't have any financial skin in the game, or is this somebody who's going to have a very big bank balance if I adhere and respect and pay attention to what they're telling me is going to happen?
That's exactly right. And we also need to be very careful about data, because we have an ideology right now that the more data, the better. And if the decision is made on the basis of data, there are no values. But that's not true. There's no such thing as data-driven. Every decision is driven by values. And sometimes even decisions that are based on data are wrong because we will never have the data that we would need to make a good decision. So, for example, with climate change, there's no database about the future. We only have data about the past. But the future doesn't always resemble the past. So we have to be much more enlightened about making predictions. It's fine to predict, but we have to be mindful of what can be predicted, what can't, and what are the limits of prediction.
I just wonder, though, whether there's a danger that this philosophy gives credence to those who say that experts should be ignored because they're all self-interested. Like if we think back, Carissa, to the debate around Brexit, you'll remember the senior UK politician Michael Gove famously saying people in this country have had enough of experts. Now, if you follow down the path that you have shown us, does it lead to that place where people can say, please don't pay attention to those experts? They don't know what they're talking about because it hasn't happened yet.
Not necessarily, because experts are experts about the past and the present. There is no expert on the future. And yes, we can make predictions, and some predictions are better educated guesses than others, but we have to use reasoning always to make sure that we are making good causal inferences. And so one of the things that I think we should avoid is trying to ask experts about the future. So for example, I have become specialized in privacy, and I can tell you a lot about how data is being collected, but don't ask me about the future of privacy, because the future of privacy is partly in your hands, not in mine.
And tell me, what is it that exercises you so much about the discussions happening right now in relation to AI?
It worries me that even though I'm advising governments around the world, nobody's talking about the ethics of prediction. And in fact, that is the primal problem, the primal ethical issue that we have, because it goes against due process. If I reject a loan application on the basis of a criterion, you can challenge me. If you don't have X amounts of pounds or euros in the bank, then you know what to do to change the decision. And if I'm wrong, you can challenge me. But if I deny your loan application or your job application or any other opportunity on the basis of a prediction, there's no way to challenge that. So what I'm worried about is that we're creating this Kafkaesque system in which we can no longer contest decisions.
So the computer says no will happen with more regularity.
Yes, because they're based on predictions, but that's not facts. And we should anchor democracy more closely to facts.
Mm-hmm. So what can we learn from the boxer Joe Frazier in this regard?
So in 1971, there was this world championship, and it was the first time that two champions were fighting each other for the heavyweight championship. And both of them were previously undefeated. And in the press conference, Muhammad Ali boasted that he made a prediction that he was going to win, that it would be no contest. And of course, Joe Frazier realized that this wasn't the man making numbers in his head. He was intimidating his opponent. And he got really riled up and ended up defeating the previously undefeated Great Ali in the fight of the century. So we should do like Joe Frazier. And when we listen to a prediction about the social world that is against our interest, instead of taking it as a fact and accepting it, we should take it as an invitation for defiance.
Very interesting theory. Thank you so much, Carissa Veliz, there on her new book, which is out now. It's called Prophecy.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.